Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Battle gigantic monsters in epic locales. As a hunter, you'll take on quests to hunt monsters in a variety of habitats, take down these monsters, and receive materials you can use to create stronger weapons and armor in order to hunt even more dangerous monsters. In Monster Hunter World, the latest installment in the series, you can enjoy the ultimate hunting experience, using everything at your disposal to hunt monsters in a new world, teeming with surprises and excitement. That is the intro marketing copy for Monster Hunter World. And while it might sound nice and even approachable, it is terrifying, because that game is terrifying. And I'm Danielle Riendo, and this is Waypoint Radio, episode 128. Joining me today are Patrick Klebeck.
Hello.
There he is.
And Austin Walker.
I'm a hunter now.
You're a hunter now.
We can't
now.
Talk about that game, to be clear,
right.
Really. But what you're
we
getting
can talk
at...
about. Hey, here, spoilers. Monster Hunter World is a Monster Hunter game.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Shit, I broke embargo.
You broke embargo. That wasn't me. Capcom, don't... Tim Turi, don't send your lawyers after me.
Don't send the lawyers, because we're just going to talk about games that intimidate us,
yeah.
which I think the Monster Hunter series is
totally.
A fair point.
Yeah, 100% includes
Monster Hunter. You bring it up because, so Code went out for that last week, or a week before that, maybe, even I don't even remember, it's a blur. It's a monster hunting blur at this point. And we'll talk more about that game next week once we can. But you haven't dug into it quite yet,
no.
Right?
And I played about an hour of Monster Hunter ever, and it was in like a guided tour that Capcom made, like a PR thing
like
that was
previous...
like a person who knows what the hell they're doing is going to show you exactly how to do things, which I think is probably the best way to experience that game, probably.
Right.
But I think one of the main narratives around Monster Hunter in general is how deep of a series it is, like incredibly deep.
Mm-hmm.
It has this like people who like the games feel like there's a really, really satisfying treadmill of progression, of getting ever stronger, getting ever better monster parts to make better monster
right.
swords, whatever, monster weapons.
Monster swords.
Monster
they're called
swords.
Monster swords.
They're
not called monster swords.
Swords.
They have cool ass names.
Right,
like
there's
the,
cool shit,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's all very cool. But it is, you know, I don't even know how many games deep at this point, and just a very, very intimidating thing for a total newbie to kind of jump into, like this incredibly deep, vast world of monster swords.
Right. So, like, I played a very small amount, like, in Monster Hunter terms, 5 hours or something
yeah.
of a Vita, or not a Vita.
A blink of an eye.
A PSP Monster Hunter game, probably.
Sure.
Monster Hunter Portable. G Generations X?
Get it right. With a Z.
Austin,
that's
you are paid to know these things.
Dragon
why don't
Ball
you know
Fighters.
The name of...
Yeah, I'm not a...
Hunter
I'm
Fighters.
Clearly... Why? Who let him have a website? He doesn't even know the name of the third Monster Hunter on PSP that he got from that store in Midtown. Like, whatever.
In 2006.
In 2000 question mark.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Right.
My problem then, and one of my problems with Monster Hunter always, and also maybe this goes to say, you can talk about this with a range of other games that are kind of similar to Monster Hunter.
Yeah.
The Souls games, Dragon's Dogma, even Western-style RPGs like Skyrim or something.
Maybe Fallout.
Fallout.
Maybe Fallout's a little more accessible, but in the general vein, yeah.
They all have a structure in which you can... You have a sort of a soft intro to what type of character you'll be playing. You say, like, okay, I want to use this weapon. Or, like, oh, I'm going to put points into this stat. Whereas something like the BioWare games, like, oh, I'm a Vanguard. I know I can put points into the skills, and there's some determination there, but I'm a Vanguard. These are basically the abilities that I have. I'm going to do the thing where I biotic charge at a guy and knock him into the air, and then I'm going to shotgun him out of the air. It's going to be great. Whereas in a game like Monster Hunter, you go, like, all right, there are 14 weapons to start with. Which one do you – you got to have them all.
This one looks cool.
What do you want, sword and shield?
Hey, you can go to a training area if you want to, like, learn the moves, but, like, I don't know. You just figure it out,
just
man.
Fuck
like,
around
you got
with
it.
Yeah, exactly. And I super didn't have it. And, like, I was speaking with Matt Kessler, who I believe is a noted Monster Hunter aficionado. And I said, like, does anyone ever know which Monster Hunter weapon to use? I said, it's hard because I think a lot of this stuff looks like cool enough. I'm just not the sort of person who – I am just the sort of person who wants to know what the weapon tree is already. And when you look at a game like Monster Hunter or a game like Dragon's Dogma, it's like, I guess I want to be the one with a good sword. Like, I don't
– You want the good
so
monster sword.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you two, like, confront a problem like this?
Well, for me, and we could talk about Bloodborne more later, because I've got Bloodborne on the brain lately, and that, it's kind of funny, because I, you know, of course, I have Bloodborne on the brain right now. But like, I had never played anything like any of these games before.
Right.
I actually have very limited experience with Western RPGs that aren't BioWare RPGs. So I literally, like, I picked a weapon that was like, that looks painful.
Right.
I'll do that thing. And then I sort of figured it out as I went painful. Along. But it's very much like, it looks good. You know, it's not something I actually knew that, oh, there's a whole tree, you're going to put points into this, you're going to actually open up sort of new options from here. It was just, that's a sword.
It's a sword, yeah. Yeah, I think Bloodborne was actually weirdly okay for me, because I'd always read Bloodborne as a sort of, not an explicit follow-up to Castlevania, but in my mind it was like, oh shit, this is like, I can see how Castlevania became, I can see how the design elements of Castlevania evolved organically into a place where a game like Bloodborne could come out.
Sure.
And so threaded cane was like my obvious, like, oh yeah, I gotta have a whip. I gotta be a Belmont.
It's
like,
Castlevania.
It's Castlevania.
Like, I see
Castlevania.
Some monsters, there's some vampire kind of shit going on.
There are no vampires in Bloodborne, are there?
I mean, like, if you take the vampire thing, like, pretty
right.
far, you can
yes.
kind of, you
Everyone
know.
Everyone is a vampire.
They're all kind of bloodsuckers.
They're all
but,
vampires.
Yeah.
You're right. I was the opposite of right. I was completely
no, it's
wrong.
Okay. Patrick, how about you? How do you approach this in a game that seems a little, let's say, opaque at first?
Well, I think it's always difficult to tell because, like, how much of it is, and I think this leads to the intimidation for various series, like, how much is in there because that's how the games have always been? How much
right.
is mm-hmm. there because it's intrinsic to the game? Like, I think you would have some, like, Souls fans argue that the opaqueness is part of the appeal, and that, like, trying to peel back the layers of opaqueness is, like, part of the fun of a brand new one of these games. It's like, the stuff they don't tell you is as exciting as the stuff that is right in front of you and is obvious.
Right.
And there are layers of that are true, and then there are other things that are just, like, bad UI and things that I think, like, Souls games. Like, if you play, like, Dark Souls 3 and Bloodborne are both, like, pretty good entries into those series that have smoothed out the things that made
yeah.
sense to smooth out and left the rough edges around the places that should probably continue to be rough. And so the problem with, like, I put, you know, maybe 10, 15 hours into Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate, 4 Ultimate, the one that came out on Wii U.
Okay. Yeah.
Because
with
it was
the swimming? Could you swim in that game?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yeah. It was a port of a 3DS game onto the Wii U. And it was around the time that I had played Dark Souls and, like, 999. And I was on this sort of kick where I wanted to try and play games that I had either
New Patrick.
Dismissed. Yeah, well, it was just like, it's like we would have requested Giant Bomb at the time, but, like, I wish you guys play Monster Hunter. And just, like, no one was into that sort of game. And I was like, well, maybe I'll take the time and not become an expert, but maybe I can try and get over the initial hump and at least be able to say something about it that goes beyond, I don't get how those games work. And Monster
right.
Hunter is a series that doesn't do a particularly good job of sort of, like,
no.
tutorializing. I think that is something I can confidently say about the several Monster Hunter games that I have dipped my toes into. And what it shares in common with the Souls games is, like, often you'll end up having friends that want to convince you to try one is like, hey, I'll be your guide. Like,
yeah.
the Souls games were very much like that for a while. It was like someone that would be there to try and, you know, push you gently in the right direction to try and give you hints so that you wouldn't give up in frustration. And Monster Hunter, I think, you know, without speaking to the new one, has historically worked in that same way, where it is a game that you feel the need to go ask someone for advice, to go look up long YouTube tutorials,
yep.
to go read message board threads. And historically, I have felt the Monster Hunter series has not justified that level of obfuscation and allowing or not finding a better way to onboard players. I think Monster Hunter has generally been a series that has mostly just been okay with the fact that we are what we are. Like, our fans have figured out in the past, and we're just not that interested or have not putting in the time to do a better sort of onboarding process. And I can't even really speak to it in World, not even embargo aside. I've only played, like, an hour, so it's, like, hard to even – I wouldn't be able to necessarily speak to, like, its own onboarding process. It's something I'll be able to get into next week after I put in a bunch of hours this weekend. But, like, I think it is a question of – how much is inherent to the game design that it's acting that way, and that the level of difficulty in getting into the flow of that game is inherent to, right? Like, I think some people would argue that, like, Monster Hunter and Dark Souls, like, the wall and scaling that wall is part of, like, are you actually just going to be into this? Because if you can't get over the wall, what's over the wall is not going to be interesting to you.
That's the thing that is, I actually think, you're right. I see people make that argument. Mm-hmm. They make that argument about the Souls games. They make that argument about, and not just that. They make that argument about Dota. They make that argument about
fighting games, even in certain contexts.
Right, totally.
Yeah.
They make that argument about real sports. They make that argument about a lot of things, right? Like, about writing, about dancing. It's like, well, if you're not going to put in if you're not going to put in the work to get really good at it, you're not going to ever like it, really. And and I think that is I understand where that comes from. That often comes from having scaled the wall yourself already and having had fun in that. So, like, again, I'm not going to speak it's very specifics about Monster Hunter World, but I found my weapon. It's taken me 15 hours and some experimenting, but, like, I know the weapon that I like the most. I still want to experiment with other things.
You got a good monster
and
sword.
Right, I have a good monster sword. I use a switch axe, which is are no new weapons. I have no problem saying, like, the weapon I've decided to use is this thing called a switch axe. It's a big axe. The main mode is it's a big axe that you can swing around, but like a Bloodborne weapon, it can transform into a sword, into this big, sword that does really good damage and some elemental effects and stuff. And it looks really cool. Like, it's a weapon that's been in the series for a long time. But the way I got there was by – the game opens up and says, like, all right, which of these 14 weapons do you want? Do you want the bow? Do you want the charge blade? Do you want the dual blades? Do you want the great sword? Do you want the gun lance? Do you want the hammer? Do you want the heavy?
I want the gun lance. That sounds badass.
So that's the thing is, Patrick, I didn't have the response you had, and that's the thing is, like, if I had the response you just had, I'd be like, yeah, baby, gun lance all the way. Also, Patrick,
I didn't pick the gun lance.
You should check out the gun lance. It's neat. Do you want the heavy bow? Do you want the light bow? Do you want bow gun? Do you want the hunting horn? Do you want the insect glaive?
Wait, the hunting horn is itself a weapon.
Yeah, the hunting horn.
It's not a tool.
Horn.
It's a weapon.
No, it's like a bagpipe that you hit people with.
It's a support
with.
Class, right?
Okay,
it's a class.
I sort of love that.
Play notes that do buffs to your whole team, but also just hit people with a big fucking hammer that is also a bagpipe that plays as
that's
you
rad.
Use it.
Actually,
it's cool.
That's like the Zarya way of playing it. Right?
Yes, totally. That's
okay,
the thing.
Awesome.
Like, I wish I had the response that you just had to that, and the response that Patrick had to gun lance. I wanted to have so bad.
You would have an emotional connection to this weapon,
right? That would have been an intro to me. That would have been the thing that pushed me up out of the thing. But, like, so let's speak about the last time I played a Monster Hunter game. That game was just like, all right, like, go play, go pick a weapon, go. And what I would have really loved would have been to say, like, all right, here are 14 optional hunts you can go on where you have to use all of the weapons.
Yeah.
And you have to or you get to use all of the weapons and try them out. And, like, here's some guidance on how they work.
It's almost like the Bastion method.
Right.
Like those little challengers all
exactly
had a specific
it.
Weapon
yes.
associated. Yeah.
Totally like that.
That's a good idea.
That's a really good idea. Right.
Hey Monster Hunter Games.
Horizon Zero Dawn is a really smart thing where every time you get a new weapon, there is a quest associated with that weapon that forces you to do the primary thing that weapon is meant to do. And then you both get experience, you complete a quest, you end up learning more about that weapon. So it's not just, hey, here's a new set of arrows. It's like, actually, like, you need to go use those arrows in the context they're meant for.
Go break armor shells off this thing with this with this kinetic explosion.
Really smart way of, like, both introducing something and not saying, like, hey, you need to go do this. It's more like, if you want to learn more about this, here's a quest that is optional that you'll both get a benefit for and also learn something in the process of doing it.
I really like the hunting ground quests in Horizon for that too, which were like, all right, actually use those traps. Like, really use them. I know you feel like you don't need to use them that often in fights because you have a method that works for you, but use them here, see how they work, try your best. I actually really liked those. But my greater point, and this is speaking to what you're saying, Patrick, is I think it is underselling the the talent and ability of game makers to say that the best thing that you can do is just climb that fucking wall, and that they shouldn't build an incline, a softer incline for you to get
multiple
to get on.
Routes, multiple routes, paths,
exactly,
you know?
Exactly. Like the people who make these games are deeply talented. Like
yes,
the and the experience of organically bashing your head against it until you scale it, which is a weird image, like getting over
it's
it.
It's like you're climbing, bash, and like bash, climb,
yeah, you
bash,
use your
you
forehead
know,
as yep. a
it's
clamp,
part of it.
As part of it,
you getting over it. That's
yeah, exactly.
New game.
That is a great feeling, but it's not the only good feeling. Yeah. There's lots of good feelings you could have, and I feel like when I play a game like, again, like Horizon isn't a game I love, but you're right, Patrick, those moments were really good for me in learning what all of my available tools are, and I do wish that there was a little bit, even just the promise of that would make getting into a game like this easier. My answer was watch 14 YouTube videos.
Right. Like, and actually, the folks who make these games, like Capcom, going onto the website to find this little bit of marketing copy to open this with, they have 14, you know, Capcom-made tutorial videos.
Those videos aren't good enough.
Yeah, I'm sure they're not. I'm just saying, like, they know. They know.
Totally.
They understand. They know the thing that they're making, or at least the thing that they're marketing, has this accessibility issue, or if not accessibility, at least, you know, helping a newbie in.
Or
kind
at
of
least
issue.
The reputation of an accessibility
yes.
issue, right?
Yes.
Or of, again, I
they're
think
leaning
it's
into it in
yes,
a certain way.
Totally.
Which
totally.
It tells you something, I think.
So yeah, but I guess that's my second question is, have you ever been in a position where you do go off-site or out of the game to find a resource? And what do you feel about that as a person who likes games? Like, do you think that that is – people are split on this. I know a lot of people who think, like, no, the game should teach me everything I need to know about the game. And there are people who really enjoy going on to the Wikias and, and watching YouTube tutorials and, like, and watching other people or talking to friends and trying to learn new tactics that way.
So I we talked about this a tiny bit last night, but for those who don't know, I had never played a Souls game. And I'm just going to talk about Bloodborne because I think it's the closest thing I have to this conversation.
Totally.
But,
and also because you have Bloodborne on the brain right now.
I've got a bloody Bloodborne brain.
That's fair.
You know, it's very bloody.
That's fair.
It's hemorrhaging Bloodborne
oh,
right
no,
now.
Oh, no, that's
okay, it's real bad. I got to see a doctor.
Yeah,
Yosefka,
definitely.
Let me into your clinic.
Don't go to that doctor. That's not a doctor. Don't go to Yosefka. You're going to get more blood on the brain, I promise.
She has some issues. But I sort of started playing the game because I was doing a Let's Play at my job at the time at Polygon with Phil Kohler. And so I'd watch him play the game, and I was sort of like, you know, his like, kind of like his coach. Not really his coach. That's not the right word. I wasn't really telling him what to do. I was more like, I don't know, emotional support as he got through that game. So I watched him play the game, and then I was like, oh, I'm interested in this. I want to play myself. But it was almost as if I was watching a walkthrough and then going to actually go and play the game and knew what mistakes he had made, so I avoided those mistakes. And that was actually a really wonderful experience to have as a first-time Soulsborne player to kind of know at least what to expect in certain situations. And I found new things on my own, and I did all kinds of stuff on my own, of course, but it was really helpful to have that other resource. And then as I played the game sort of myself, I had like the you know, hardcover guide that had like stat and every weird thing, and I would read that. And I found it really fun to do that with that game. I would not find it fun to do with games that are not extremely difficult. It's a weird thing, but there's like a very big disconnect for me.
Huh.
I would not appreciate that in like a 3D platformer. I would hate that. That would ruin some of the fun for me.
Part of what you want is a surprise in a Mario Odyssey or something.
Exactly.
Like you figuring out how to get the moon is the joy.
Is the excitement.
It's not the execution on it,
exactly.
necessarily. Gotcha.
But a game that is very difficult, and I feel at times can be a little unfair at times, or even be like against me as a player at times, like the sort of mean teacher versus the kind of nice sort of forgiving teacher model. I feel like having that extra helps me and helps me enjoy things.
Totally. Patrick, how about you?
I don't like watching 30-minute YouTube videos. I don't
at
all. I have zero interest.
Ever.
You did a good job. Your video is very good. I'm not judging the videos or the quality of them, but like I have zero interest in going down that path. Like often,
so you don't want me to link you to this playlist of tutorials from Monster Hunter World's weapons, each of which were shot at Gamescom by this one very dedicated
you want
player.
This gun horn?
It's called a gun horn.
No,
sorry, gun lance.
Ultimately, what I want the game, or when I ask someone for advice, is like, look, like, what is the most efficient way in, and then I'll just stick with that path, and then I can deviate from it later once I've got my sea legs under me. Like the idea that I'm going to look at like 14 videos of a bunch of weapons, like, that's not useful to me, as opposed to, like, is like, do the, like, I ended, you know, the weapon I picked in Monster Hunter World was just like two fast
swords.
Blades.
Yeah, it's like.
I was like, I'm gonna get away from the sword and shield, but I'm gonna go something slightly adjacent to that that is still within my wheelhouse. And although it's not the most interesting, like, I looked at the weapons and went, those look way more interesting, like, in terms of a combat style. Like, what I'm worried about is that I won't get over the wall with that kind of weapon. And so I'll stick with something that's a little more boring, but is approachable. And then I'll deviate once, you know, after maybe 10 hours. And I'm like, okay, I have a sense of the flow of this game. And what games could very easily, even games that have walls for you to scale, could have like direction points that like that, that are, it's not an easy mode. It's just saying like, look, like, even if it's just like questions like, what is your general play style? Like ways of like molding the game around the player, I think would be really useful, and games could do a better job of that. And I want actually more like broadly, when I think about, and I'm curious what, how this falls for the two of you, is when I broaden out this question of like, what keeps me away from certain video games or certain genres or certain types? And like, when I was thinking about it, when I was walking my dog this morning, like stats freak me the fuck out. Uh-huh. Like,
well,
games
that was
that
the,
are...
Did you see that Too Mellow video that our four mod Too Mellow, who is fantastic, put a video up on Twitter today, taken from our 8-hour stream.
Little Lily Princess.
Right, what's that called? Wait,
Little Lily Princess.
In which there's that moment when it's a visual novel with some stats. It's by Hanako Games. They've made things like Long of the Queen, Black Closet, Magic Diary, I think is what it's called. A bunch of them. And there's a moment in this game. You play a girl who goes to a kind of an all girl school.
She's got a thing about feet.
Another character has a thing about feet. Yeah. Thank you very much. And there's a moment where you have to start assigning what classes she goes to. And when that happens, a billion stats come on screen because you're raising like creativity and honor and grace and like all of these wild stats. And you can see me and Rob go like, oh yeah, video game time, a billion stats. And then it cuts to, is it your face,
and
Danielle?
It's my face,
and you're just like, ah.
I think I said like, you have to do something. That was my reaction.
Which speaks to what you're saying, Patrick, which is like, stats can totally turn off, and it, not turn off, but be that wall for you.
It's
well,
so
like for example,
I
recently downloaded Darkest Dungeon on Switch, a game I've heard a lot of really good things about from people whose interest in video games line up very, very nicely with the things I'm interested in. Granted, I only played 5 minutes because I only had a couple of seconds to turn it on when in between things. But like that game, right out of the gate, is just a screen full of fucking stats. Stats, stats on stats, stats that affect other stats,
lots
buffs that are related to stats.
Yep.
And on, like, as I stared at that screen, I could see what that, I could see what that screen means to me in 10 hours.
Yes.
But staring at that screen, the moment I booted up the game, where like there's no real onboarding, it's just like, yo, there's stats, we're not gonna really explain what these stats are, you'll probably figure it out as you go through because you're supposed to fail, and I get that's the concept of the game, but like I saw me right now going like, ugh, and then I saw me 10 hours going like, oh, I understand what these things are, and that was that I had the option to then flick over and start playing more Celeste on my Switch and thought, wow, I know how a platformer works. Why don't I just go and do that instead?
The funny, there's two funny things about that. One, I played the intro to that game on my way over here this morning on
Celeste
my commute.
Celeste or Darkest Dungeon?
Darkest Dungeon, sorry. And I almost lost a character in the pre-first mission. I've played that first mission a dozen times, and I've started or restarted that game on various platforms. And my my knight just got critted twice in a row. It's like, oh, he has no HP anymore. The second thing is, literally 11 hours ago, Tyler Sigmund, who is the co-designer of that game, I think, and the co-founder of the studio, just tweeted out PSA, if you feel like you are bad at Darkest Dungeon, that's normal. After I read that, I decided to play on the Radiant mode in that game, which is like the slightly easier one.
One I started on,
I looked into it a little bit, and adding that mode is, for instance, I think a really great idea for making a game that was really impenetrable and really hard a little bit easier, because it explicitly, one, it just gets rid of a lot of grinding. It apparently cuts the time you put into that game in half. And two, it makes recovering from failure easier because the costs for things, I believe, are lower for like upgrades and you know, healing your people and stuff like that. Again, I'm pretty sure that's how it works. And I like that as another way to help onboarding, in that it doesn't help the moment-to-moment onboarding, but it makes the harm feel a little bit more less permanent. It makes you feel like you can recover a little bit more from it.
Yeah.
And I think that's another way to encourage players to kind of get into these difficult things. It's like, hey, fucking up is okay, and it is all right if you fell. We're gonna help you get back up on your feet. This is not the end of the world. Whereas a lot of games, especially games like Darkest Dungeon, the combination of that like stat overload and the fact that once you fail, that's it, you're fucked, can make you feel like, oh, this is just never going to be for me. I can't see that 10-hour mark that Patrick's talking about of like, oh, I can imagine when I'd get my head around this thing.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
To something I wrote this week, actually, about Way of the Passive Fist and how its difficulty sliders are just so wonderful for onboarding, especially if you're not into brawlers or fighting games or haven't played them in, you know, like 20 years, which is basically my case, really, or played them, you know, more or less seriously in such a long time. Because it allows you to, you don't even have to look at the stats themselves. It's just like slightly easier, slightly harder. You know, you kind of like pick your place organically on four different sliders. It's things like enemy health and, you know, how often you'll get checkpoints, things like that, things that you can actually really tailor things to your own style. And how I would love to see that approach in more games that are very difficult games, basically. You know, I know a lot of very angry people tweeted at me about this, but I think it would be amazing to have something like that in a Souls
game. I'm so torn on it because, like, I also think that in the past, I've been a proponent of those sorts of things being in the Souls games because I think there's a lot to those games beyond their difficulty. And I think that it sells them short to say that the only reason you should play that game is to get into the difficult combat and have those have that kind of failure loop. I like that. That's why
or that if you don't have that response to the game, if that's not the joy you get from it, that somehow you've missed the point of the game.
I think that's
presumptuous, to say the least.
It's both presumptuous. It is super presumptuous. And it's also like it's demeaning. Like, I think you can explain to someone. It's our jobs to explain to people and to like dig into these ideas of like, oh, Dark Souls is about this, like the eternal recursion of failure, the attempt to push through, blah, 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 blah. Like, that is like that's what we say, like, oh, that's what those games are often about, both thematically and mechanically, and it's why they work really well. I can imagine someone being like, oh, okay, I get it because you've explained it to me well. And also what I'm interested in doing is like picking up rings and reading their item descriptions and like poking around these worlds. And on one hand, I respect the creative freedom of the developer to be like, no, we really, really want to make this point mechanically. But on the other hand, I do think that the fan side dismissal of those who do want to experience it for this other thing. Like, there are people who just want to play that game because it looks pretty, who like the design of the world.
It's a fascinating, actually world-building.
Exactly. And so, like, what I the kind of, like, weird centrist position I'm taking here
You gotta hear both sides.
It's like one of those things of like, I would never demand that From make these games easier or whatever. Right. One, because I'm of the camp that's like, I don't think those games, I think that like it's a bunch of bullshit that people talk about those games as being capital H hard. I think that there's lots of ways in which they're actually much easier than
they're capital P punishing.
They're punishing
rather than capital H hard.
Yes, that's actually right. Sure. Well, and the thing is that, like, I think that they're punishing, but also I've written about this before, but there's lots of ways in which they encourage you to work with other players. A lot of the difficulty comes from, like, a weird culture around what counts as winning in that game.
Sure.
And, like, what's allowable. And, like, if everyone was just like, no, we're always going to play this game in co-op and we're all going to work together, a lot of those things are actually, like, pushover. You walk through
that
game.
Yes, I mean, summoning is essentially, in a lot of ways, the easy mode of,
totally.
Of Dark Souls.
Totally.
It really does, like, cut the difficulty. Especially if you're someone who knows what they're doing.
Yep, I have problem doing that.
They can essentially tank the game for you. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, am I someone that would touch a mode in a Souls game or a game in which I have personally identified as the difficulty and the punishment being that's my attraction to the game.
Right.
But if there was just like a hey, you can't go online. It's this is offline only. Like.
Right.
But hey, like you can, it's something that's a little
game genie mode. Like,
hey, you're gonna put on this ring, and this ring means you can't go online. But this ring allows you to like kill the enemies easier. Like, I just don't care. Like, I can still get out of that game
or something like that. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
yeah. I exactly, Patrick. Like, adding those options would not detract from my experience in any way, and it would open up the game to so many more people. Who might then later say, all right, I'm going to go back and play it on the default settings. And, like, I think that that's a benefit and not something that we should, like, frame as being, I don't know, deleterious to the soul of the game.
Water it down.
The heart of the game.
You got to get good.
Right, yeah. Those people can fuck off altogether, Danielle. Like,
of course.
I don't, like,
they were in my mentions this week, and I was just like, I don't want to touch your
mute
game.
Them.
You have the game.
Can I tell you something
want.
About those people?
Yes.
You can make it so that's the last time you ever interact with them, and then they shout at you forever and have no idea that how small and insignificant their voice is to you. And, like, it's beautiful. Every time I do it, every time I mute someone who is shitty on the internet, I almost every time
you
respond to them.
That's
and I
happens.
Get their soul, and every time I go to respond to them and say, this is the last time I'll ever hear you speak. And I don't do it, but I almost do. And if you're listening, there's a chance.
In your heart of hearts.
You've been shitty on the internet to somebody. In my heart of hearts, I've said it.
You've said it.
I've said it in my soul.
You've
I've communicated
said
it.
And it. They can never say
One
it again.
One day they'll walk down a dark corridor and see a writing on the ground.
Yep.
And they'll Dark Souls read my blood spatter. And it'll be like, did you know that I've never heard your words before? And that's it.
And that's it forever.
You know what I wish? I wish Twitter, this is an extremely petty feature of Twitter, but you know, they don't like to invest in real things to help people, so they might as well invest in my pettiness feature. But like, what if you could, all the people you've muted, like sent to the phantom zone of Twitter, if you could get like once a month, like a summarized email of the things they have sent to you, just so I can just like eat it up and just be like, motherfucker, like you sending this into the phantom zone, but like, every once in a while, I get a little check-in, like, what bullshit are those the Phantom Zone people up to?
Yep.
I would like
that.
And if there's some way of reflecting some of it back on, like, how much you don't care about what they're saying. Like, if there was, like a oh, you sent 300,000 messages to Patrick Klepek, and he didn't read any
shit.
Of them. Like, that would be a beautiful thing. A deflection shield.
That's truly the hardest, the game that needs the best onboarding is Twitter.
I agree.
And You're both aware of, like, the soft block, right? Like, have you used the soft block?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
I've used the soft block.
The soft block is... So I had one follower who the mute just didn't work. Like, he had an immunity spell to the mute.
Oh,
like,
wow.
It said... I've tried
the
multiple.
Game.
He did the side quest. He got the immunity ring.
He had the Dark Souls easy mode ring on. It somehow allowed him to get away from my mute. And even though I, like, unmute him in, like, the desktop and then, like, mute him in an app hoping, like, maybe it would line up there.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It wouldn't happen. Like, he just continued to speak to me, but like, he was just annoying. It wasn't like the block felt too much. Like, it expressed too much of how I felt the situation. I just didn't want to see the tweets anymore, and so I did the soft block, you know. And for people that aren't aware of the way soft block work is that if you block someone and then immediately unblock them, they are no longer following you. And for most people, they're not going to notice that happened because they don't get a notification. You don't get told that someone blocked you. You don't get told that you are no longer following someone. And so you can essentially quiet someone into like a Phantom Zone 2.0.
It's like a light Phantom Zone, exactly.
A light Phantom
like
Zone
yeah.
By doing the soft block.
And they'll still see your stuff sometimes when somebody else retweets it. And they think, oh, I must still follow. No, you don't.
Mm-hmm. You don't, buddy.
Another solution, to get us back on topic to this, is something I actually saw in and this by this I mean the onboarding difficulty, the intimidation, and especially what Patrick was saying about stat wall. Like, you open the game, it's like, oh, there's a billion stats here. It's just to hide the stats. And for a while, and slowly unfold them. That's a thing that I like to do in tabletop role-playing games a lot. One of my favorite games is a game called Burning Wheel, which is a really crunchy, dense tabletop role-playing game with a lot of moving parts that does really great characterization and like long arcs of a character's life. It's like kind of a medieval fantasy RPG that's very focused on interactions between people and obligation to society and interactions between different organizations, and also it's a game that the only way you level up is by failing. You literally have to try something and fail at it to get XP, and the way you eventually to get the hardest things is to do things that are legendarily difficult and fail at them, and then you get to mark the XP you need to succeed. It's really cool.
That's
in
rad.
That way. But there's lots of moving parts in it, and so when I play that game with people, or when I run it for people, and this is when it's been run for me, the smartest thing I see GMs do is don't worry about a lot of those rules. Here's the very basic dice mechanic. You roll these dice. This is how you know you've succeeded or failed. And then bit by bit, session by session, start adding in the new things. Oh, we're going to do the more complicated combat rules this turn. Oh, this time, in this session, we're going to do one of the kind of debate rules that let you roll the dice to have a long, drawn-out debate. And a game that actually did this really well, a video game that did this really well, surprisingly to me, was Xenoblade Chronicles 2 last year, where for the first, and it kind of comes out two ways, because I can imagine this also being intimidating to a different set of players, which is I was 25 hours into that game and still getting tutorials.
Right.
But it wasn't a constant barrage of tutorials. The way it would do something is at the start of a new chapter, it would introduce new mechanics. Then you'd play that chapter for 4 to 5 hours. And at the end, you'd have a boss fight. And in the boss fight, it would reveal a new super move you could do, or a new way to summon in a creature or something like that. And you would use it to win the boss fight. Then at the start of the next chapter, it would be oh, hey, here's a little more info on that thing you just learned how to do. And then it would give you another 5 hours, 6 hours to explore, do side quests, internalize that new, more complicated thing. And then at the end of that, you'd get another little layer at the very end of that chapter. And it was just really, I have some issues. I have lots of issues with that game, but the pacing on it was really brilliant for me as a player, at least. It helped me get into it in a way that I hadn't been able to get into past Xenoblade games, because the onboarding was too rapid or too slow.
Yeah. A lot of this has to do with teaching style.
Absolutely.
I feel like as I'm sort of listening to you talk about this, it's like you have adapted something as a teacher. When you're GMing the crunchy game, I forgot what it was called. Burning Wheel.
Yeah.
You've adapted those rules. You have internalized those rule
totally.
Sets. And you're actually doling them out to your players as if they're students, kind of meeting them halfway in a certain way. And I will always appreciate a game that meets you where you are and kind of shepherds you along, as opposed to kind of does the 80s martial arts movie thing of break your face on a board until you get it right. Which, by the way, is not how martial arts are actually taught.
You don't do that?
No, we don't do that. Good teachers in every discipline in life, physical or more academic, whatever.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Upper, whatever.
Brain.
Sorry,
blood brain.
I'm sorry, excuse me. My brain is hemorrhaging from the bloodboard on my brain. I apologize. My words are hard. Good teachers all have their own style, right? But I think really, really good teachers always know where to meet your student and how to meet your student.
Well, this is the difficulty.
Different people have different learning styles.
Well, this is the difficulty with video games.
Yeah.
It's with a tabletop role-playing game, I am the GM and can do that myself.
Right.
With a video game, it has to anticipate the needs of every student.
Everybody who plays it.
This is also why we need small classrooms in the world.
Correct.
Is that if you're speaking as a teacher, 1 year I had 30 students, and the next year, 1 year I had 25 students, the next year I had 35 students. And that on paper for a lot of people, that's just your lesson plan for 25 is the
you're
same as 35.
Over a threshold there.
No. Because suddenly you need to, if you're actually going to hit all 35 students, you really need to reduce the amount of time you're spending on each individual answer that comes in. You really need to anticipate a wider range range of aptitudes about different things. It's like, oh, this student really understands the like the interest in technology this class is hitting. This other student is really interested in political economy. This other student is really interested in culture and race. This other student, and it's like, okay, well, I need to cast a wider net and water down my points in order to actually push through the main agenda of the course, the main lesson of the course. And that's really hard. And a video game has to do that for a billion people.
Everybody.
For everybody.
Everybody's going to touch it.
Where you don't necessarily get the opportunity to say, like, oh, you're having trouble with parrying. I can see it. I'm your teacher. I can see that you got down the combo. You got down the dodge. But you just can't hit the parry enough.
Right, yeah.
Right. And so what game designers have to do is anticipate which of those problems are going to be felt by the most amount of people. Which ones are the ones that are going to, you know, in addressing it, going to produce the best feeling of satisfaction or you know, provide the best outlet to get across a message or whatever the kind of core goal is that they're working for. And that's really hard to do without lots of testing. And testing is expensive, and even testing sometimes doesn't reveal some of that stuff.
Yeah, because also every single player, every billion of those people, or however many billion of those people, is also going to have their own expectations and experiences and aptitudes and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So yes, that's not easy. That's also why I think having that ring that'll disable online mode and also make you maybe you can adjust the sliders for how slow animation plays for parrying.
That's the thing that
that's
makes.
That's why
those...
I think it would be a helpful. Oh,
they'll never do that. They'll never do that. That would never be something like if they ever were to do something with that, it would be just like damage sliders. I think is like the most that they would.
Yeah.
Would get
but even that would help a lot of people, I think. But that is why I do like the notion of the sliders in Way of Pacifist. Is that like, oh wow, like, you can really tailor this for yourself. Though I guess maybe the counter argument there that's worth considering is, you don't often know the education you need. You don't often know, as a student of a game, of a martial art, of
and that's why default modes exist.
Right.
Right?
Right, right. Is that like, hey, I actually don't necessarily know how to best onboard myself. I don't know what the best way to get into learning the Switch axe. Like, that is a game where I'm like, oh, all my options are available to me right away. Like, ah, shit, how do I actually go about it, though?
Right.
And so, I don't know. I feel like there are lots of right answers here. Some are just more right than others for certain people, and that's what makes this really hard.
I think that's fair. I also think we would go to the question bucket, but I think we also have to go.
Yeah, I think we have to tap out, sadly.
I had to be in a meeting 5 minutes ago.
Oh, shit, sorry.
Yeah, it's all right. It's cool. You know, I'll walk on it. I'll be like, I'm sorry, my Bloodborne brain got in the way.
Does the union know about Bloodborne?
Yes. They know about my brain.
They know about your brain. Okay. Do they know about Yosefka? And
they know about
the blood Yosefka. Vials?
I've been going to her clinic.
Okay.
You know, every
employee needs to go through Bloodborne training.
Yes.
Yes.
100%.
That's the new requirement.
That's the new union
advice.
Agenda is make sure everyone plays Bloodborne.
Can you play Bloodborne, please?
God.
So thank you all. And thank you to people who did send in questions. You can always send in questions to gaming@vice.com with the subject question. Shout outs, of course, to Boehm for letting us use his track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. We are on Twitter at Waypoint. We're on Facebook at Waypoint Vice and on YouTube at Waypoint Vice. And you can watch our whole 8-hour stream, which included Bloodborne, which put some Bloodborne in my brain. You can watch that on our YouTube channel, of course. And of course, you can read everything on waypoint.vice.com. Thank you so much for listening to us. Austin, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker.
Amazing. Patrick, where can we find you online?
Find me at Patrick Luppin.
Amazing. I'm at Danielle R.I. And I thank you for spending time with us. Of course, we'll be back on Monday. And as always, I will tell you, Bloodborne brain or not, be good and be good at it.
Peace.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.